welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, another great show dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, science, physics in general, cosmology, ontology. Hey, I got all kinds of words I can throw out there. But it's a show that's going to tell you why life is, which is really what it's all about, right? And tonight I thought we'd talk about spiritual life and faith. Now, you might say, spiritual life and faith. How do those two fit together? Well, I've talked about each in the past. Tonight I'm going to bring them together so that we can have a better foundation of understanding it. I thought it was pretty good because it's about that time of the year. Also, many people are not looking towards having the best next year because a lot of people are concerned about the way the world seems to be moving. We'll talk about that too, practical side of things, how faith can really work to help people, and why it sometimes doesn't. And I'll explain the scientific principles of faith, which sounds completely like, can there be scientific principles of faith? Yes, there are. And let me start with some of those. First of all, when I use the word faith, I'm talking about the ability to motivate yourself, and that means either your lower self and or your higher self, to become focused on doing certain things with purpose without having a complete understanding and without sometimes the necessary knowledge to begin with to achieve what it is you think that you want to do. Faith is the ability to do that, and it comes from having a belief in something that is greater than yourself, and that you believe that that greater thing than yourself can provide the necessary gap between your present understanding and knowledge and will allow you, therefore, to gain a convincing, willful purpose about what it is you're about to do. That's what faith is. Now, you could say, oh, well, that sounds too technical. I thought faith is God. Well, hopefully, the people who are going to be listening tonight have faith in God. But some people don't. As a matter of fact, there are people who we give tremendous power and authority to that I don't think have faith in God. But nonetheless, that being the case, they may have faith from other sources. Now, what's wrong with having a faith in a source that is something other than godly, at least? God being part of the godly group, we'll say. The problem is that if you have faith in something other than something that's godly, it's likely, it's almost certain to let you down. And when it lets you down, it's going to be a big letdown. It may convince you, it may help you in the beginning of the process to believe that you should have faith in it. But in the end, and that's what really counts, that's when it fails. And sometimes it fails by trickery, deception, distortions of truth, and outright destruction of life. And those are really bad consequences. Again, we'll talk about some of these more conceptual understandings that I'm just revealing right now later in the show as it practically applies to people's lives. All right, so how does faith work? I mean, there's actually, I mean, I gave you sort of a very big picture. Okay, faith is like what you just said, but what does that mean? Faith works by having more than one being at a time operating in the same level of life service. Or, unfortunately, it could be life destruction if it's on the wrong side of the fence. But in either case, let's talk about service, because that's what tonight is really about. If three or more souls are serving in approximately the same way together, spiritually serving, okay, souls spiritually serve, then they can operate using faith. Now, I'll explain what that means in a minute. With people, persons that are, you know, us people, but that aren't functioning as their soul, that aren't connected to their soul, it takes 30 or more before they usually develop a faith. It's a 10-to-1 ratio as far as the group size that's necessary. However, now this is the hard thing to understand here. You take the 3 or more souls that are either souls themselves or people that are functioning as souls. Those three, only three souls, are capable of producing the purpose or willful, creative design of usually, this is going to sound like a huge number, somewhere around 700 to 1,000 in that range of people. That's hard to believe. Right. So you get three people who can function as souls and therefore can gain faith together. And the next thing you know, you've got like the will of 700 to 1,000 people as if they were just average folk, okay, say, with faith. Both of them having faith now. But that's a huge difference. I mean, you know, you could say, wait a second. What's going on here? Well, in the average human, they're mostly using their self, their lower self, with a little tiny bit of help occasionally from their higher self. Well, that's okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, I guess. But with the three people who are working as their souls, or more, by the way, you end up with them working almost exclusively through their higher self and sometimes other beings working with the higher self. And so the result is just incredible. And the other beings are usually liberated souls, but the results are just incredibly multiplier. I got that word out somehow. Kind of tongue-tied tonight. Sometimes they're like a multiplier of faith. They give the people this, like, sense of relying on a godly-like being. Now, who is this being that they're relying on? Is it the higher self? No, it's not. The higher self is helping, but they aren't relying on the higher self for their faith. They're relying on something called a monad. Now, what's a monad? Well, the monad is like a great being, like a super being, that is probably for most people as high as they ever have direct contact with God. That it doesn't mean you can't have direct contact with God, period. But the monad, if you're doing complex, long-term, faith-initiated issues, usually it's the monad that's involved. And the God is like there in case the monad needs help, okay? Monads usually don't need too much help, though, because remember, this being is filling in the consciousness side. They're giving the understanding that's missing. As long as you fill in the will yourself, and you say, I got the faith, I'm willing to put up the will, you put up the understanding, and we'll get the job done. And then sometimes you get some additional omniscience, or all knowledge, coming from the higher self, along with some people call them liberated souls or masters or whatever you would like to call it. So you get this kind of conglomerate of godly beings who are helping you out if you're working as a soul. If you're working as a spiritual group of people, maybe of some church or denominational thing, whatever, and you're focused mostly on personal interests, and personal helpings of other people, you know, helping them to be clothed and helping them to eat and be warm and that sort of thing. That those kinds of things are okay. That's fine. You can do that. And it's usually done under the umbrella of, like, religion, but it doesn't have to be. But this spiritual group is mostly working through their lower selves, and their faith it doesn't even come into play until usually there's about 30 or more people, and that's the whole reason for that. I'll explain in a few minutes. And even when they have 30 people, that's just a small fraction of what three souls can do. Whoa! Holy mackerel! Because they equal 700 to like 1,000. people, the souls do, whereas the normal folk or average folk or whatever you want to call them would need that number. They'd have to have a really big, well, by standards of religion, like a big congregation, like 1,000 people or so, or 700 or 800 or 900. It's a lot of people all working under faith to do a good deed project. And the two could be equivalent to each other. Whoa. So you start thinking about this and you say, well, what happens if you get, instead of three souls, let's say you get 12. 12, okay. Well, if you get 12, it isn't like four times more. It's like 4,000 times more. It becomes way more. So now you multiply 1,000 times 4,000, and oh, holy cow, you're up to 4 million. You know, yeah, it's like having a whole city, a large city, actually, of people all working together. You have 12 people all working as souls using faith. And you might say, well, how come everybody isn't doing that? That sounds like a great deal. That's like we get a few of these groups together that do this of souls, and we got the whole job done, clean up the planet, do everything right, and boom, we're done, right? Well, it's very difficult to develop faith on the level that is called monadic, because each person has to be like a spiritual leader of sorts. They have to have have proven themselves to face the most difficult, fearful things they have about the purpose of their existence. They really have to make great sacrifices, and they have to do this, and not through just sitting in a room by themselves. They have to actually do it, and it requires just usually doing the things they really don't want to do. So, at any rate, that's the problem. You see, the folks in the congregation, you know, they're all sharing a little piece of the pie. You know, they're all, you know, they're giving up a Saturday night or this day or that evening. And it's, you know, it's something small. They're not giving up their whole life, which is oftentimes the case with the soul level faith. And they're not seeing big enough of the picture to even need to have that much faith in the first place. Because it starts with the big picture. You've got to actually have the will first to do the purpose that is so huge, like save the world. Okay, I'm going to save the whole planet. That's a big thing, right? If you think the planet needs saving, that's a huge thing. And you might only have a couple other people willing to do it with you at the beginning, so that'd be the three. And then you get the monadic infusion, you actually could possibly pull it off, particularly if you get a few more. But the point is, just to get those three, to find even one person who has that total thing is a big deal. Then two is another big deal. And three is a very big deal. It's really hard to do. And that's the reason it isn't happening. Now you could say, well, there's got to be some. Isn't there some threes that are doing? Sort of. But none that are doing it entirely connected to a thing called the second part of God's mind, or the second ray of energy focus, which is where it needs to be done on Earth at the present time. And that's why it's lacking. It's actually happening in some other segments of the way energy is represented, or the third part of God's mind is represented, but it isn't happening joining the second part with the third part, because you need the second part of God's mind in there, because, again, they have to gain as much understanding as they have purpose, and balance those two to come out with a third part, which is an intelligent action or coordinated action that changes the world. And that's the trick, is getting these things together and balanced. So it's really difficult to form what are called second-ray groups, and so far all have failed to do this thing that I'm talking about. They don't have enough faith. Wow. You didn't know that, huh? Okay, now you know. Now, some of you have maybe guessed at this from other shows I've done, and maybe you've really come to the conclusion after having read Life and Meaning or some other spiritual books on the subject. You may have already figured that. But most people do not understand this. Most people really don't even understand what faith is. So this may be kind of a shocker that, you know, like, wow, I don't know what faith is that. How can you spell it out so easily? Well, it's not that easy to spell it out, because actually most people don't understand faith because they don't have enough of it to understand it. Collectively, faith becomes more realizable when you reach the group level that can do something. Individuals cannot do much with their faith. They need at least the 3 if they're working on a soul level, or 30 if they're working on the lower self level. Now you say, what's the lower self level? What does that mean? Why is it 30? Why isn't it 35? How about 42? 30, there's a strange thing in math, and it's called statistics, and there's a part of statistics that deals with populations of people to get things done in a certain way. And it's called, and there's a formula to determine this, and it's called the Pearson product moment correlation formula. Oh boy, you're all going, oh, what did he say? Okay, don't worry about it. You're not going to be tested on it at the end of the show. But I got to say it, because a few of you might actually know statistics, and you might say, oh yeah, I know what he's talking about. But anyway, this formula, a long time ago, has proven time and time again, like a billion times probably, it's been used so often, that you got to have 30 people all on the same page, the same purpose in doing something, to have a collective kind of consciousness that can be carried through to the end of a statistical outcome. So let's say you want, the chances are this is going to happen rather than not, you know, like more likely than not. In order to get to that level, you got to have at least 30 people. That's why the sampling base in almost all really good scientific experiments requires at least 30 people who stay through the whole experiment. That's the purpose. They stay with the purpose of the whole experiment. And it's all based upon this Pearson product moment correlation formula. And so, odd as it sounds, this was determined a long time ago by, guess who? God. Yeah. How did God come up with this Pearson product moment correlation? I'm not even sure, because I still have trouble even trying to follow it when I read it in a book. So I don't know how someone creates this. Now you can say, well, what about the person who created it? They didn't create it. They discovered it by working backwards. So nobody ever created the formula. It was discovered by working backwards. But at any rate, it's part of the universe. It's the way the universe seems to be set up, at least as far as we can see it here on Earth. And it even holds true in places like the astral world and other places. Isn't that strange? I mean, it even holds true in those places. But there are other conditions that can modify it, because the quantum constant changes and certain other factors change. But nonetheless, the statistical aspects still tend to be the same. So for reasons which God knows, God chose that 30 folks, 30 people, tend to start working together as a unit and can carry through with a purpose that turns out an outcome that is more likely to happen than not. That's it. That's the formula, if you want to put it that way. The statistical significance becomes relevant after you have 30 people. But remember, souls don't work on that model. If you're working from a soul standard, you're still a human being. You could be right here in the physical world. But if you're connected and working on the consciousness of your own soul, and collectively three of you are working together by having faith, common faith, that means their purpose is the same, to achieve a goal which is spiritual. In this case, we're talking about spiritual purposes. Then the result will be that you will achieve far more than the 30. Again, up to the 700 to 1,000 people all working together would achieve. And if you can go beyond the 3, you get amazing. You can get results that are just phenomenal. Okay, so why is faith so important? Because without it, there is virtually no major purpose that is on a worldwide scale purpose, big purpose. I mean, I can have tiny purposes like I'm going to get myself a new car. You know. But a big purpose, and no major big purpose that affects large groups of other people and living things and life in general, that will succeed without having faith. Faith gives us the understanding to do things before we understand them. Faith gives us the ability to receive knowledge that we don't have when we need it. Faith gives us the ability to take that knowledge and create with it intelligent, coordinated responses here in the physical world, or at least intelligent activity in general throughout the universe. So, throughout all dimensions of time and space, where there's energy. And so this is what it does for us. This is what it allows us to do. So how important is faith? Huge. Huge. If you don't have faith, you can't do anything big in your life. Faithless people can only do small things if they're trying to do spiritual things. Now, I have to tell you the bad side of this whole thing. What about the folks that I started with that talked about earlier that don't have faith in God? Well, those folks go generally against life. They don't believe in spiritual life. They don't even believe in life itself. What they believe in is self, power, control, and destruction, ultimately, of life. And sometimes they are the people we give power to because they want that, and they become leaders and extremely destructive folks. And they have, I guess the best way to describe it is bad faith. They have bad faith that follows the dark side, evil. And this faith gives them the ability to have purpose to destroy life for sometimes protracted periods of time. However, in the end, they destroy themselves, always. Eventually will destroy themselves. And the destruction that they cause, because the dice are kind of loaded, will be overcome by spiritual faith, by others, eventually. Maybe not on the world that they just done. They may destroy that world. But regardless, eventually, all bad faith ends up being destructive to itself. And only spiritual faith will remain indefinitely. So, this is a big deal. Now, I hope I'm not confusing you with all these relatively new ideas, but they are important ones. And I think at this time of year, people start thinking about faith more if they're of one of the couple of religions that find this to be a holiday season. And so you ask yourself, okay, for all these years, I've heard about faith. How come nobody has ever told me what faith is, really? They talked about it, never told me what it was. And how come the world in general doesn't understand what faith is? Why is this missing from, like, Sunday school classes or wherever? Why aren't we getting this message? Why is it so hidden? And part of the reason has to do with that evil side. One of the things that the evil side wants to do is to convince people who are trying to lead a spiritual life that spiritual faith is nonsense. Right? That's their big deal. So they don't like religions, of course, and they certainly don't like religions that operate on faith, which most do, and they really don't like people who are functioning more soul-like from having faith, because those are the big doers. They end up making big differences in the world. And this frightens the evil ones, because those are the ones that can destroy them and sooner than later. They may not know it that they're going to be destroyed, but they get the fear levels when they're up against that kind of thing. They get real afraid of it, actually. They don't like light, and they certainly don't like it being shown on them. So that's the problem. Faith has been kind of kept underground because the dark side has worked overtime to try to make that happen. It has even gotten evil people in charge of faith-based institutions to try to destroy the institutions by creating evil deeds and destructive acts. So faith has been hammered to death, almost, spiritual faith, yes, by just the dark side. It's a main target. And if you are a person who has a lot of faith, you already know what I'm talking about. You will see it around you, and you will feel it at times. Because you become a target when you operate from this higher spiritual faith basis. A target, and it's almost like, you know, it's the very thing that evil is looking for. faith, in every sense of the word, is evil. So, and I mean that if you're a lawyer, you should know that, and a judge, if you're in the legal arena, if you're in if you're in a spiritual community, bad faith is that. And if you're just looking at the common vernacular, bad faith is ultimately evil. Sometimes people can get a bit of bad faith and get out of the evil, and that's fine. There's no problem with doing that. But a lot of people don't. And they either support those who are more evil than themselves, or they just become more and more evil in their own processes. Evil wants to destroy life because it's God's growth, and so this is where it comes from. Now, if I sound like I'm on the pulpit tonight, it's hard to talk about faith and not be doing that, because in a lot of ways, this is the foundation of most areas of religion. I'm not talking about any specific religion tonight. I'm talking about just the concepts of what this means. All right, so let's hopefully I'll get into some practical issues of dealing with the dark side. So let's leave that alone for right now and go back to the concepts of the more spiritual side of developing faith. When a person is faced with a test of their faith, and this happens more often than not as you expand the level of your will in context or purpose of life, in context with what you're doing. The more that you are connected to a bigger, quote-unquote, purpose in your life, the greater the tests are against the faith. Some of those tests come from bad faith people, but other tests come in other ways. And let me explain how this works. Because part of faith eventually involves intelligent actions or unintelligent actions, it accelerates karma when you attempt to bring about changes more quickly. And the third part of God's mind, which is really about energy. So you're trying to make changes in form or the movement of form, which is energy. And the result in form comes from energy. So the result is that any energy that is incomplete in your own background will shake your faith, will cause you to doubt your own faith. Let me give you an example of that so that you can understand what I mean. Because when I say it conceptually, it may not ring as well as an example might, okay? Here, there's an example. Let's say that you're doing a great humanitarian project, and you're working with several other people who are doing this. And some of you are getting close to working as souls. Maybe not quite there yet, okay? But you're doing pretty good. Yeah. And you have to, in order to do this, you got to have a lot of faith, because you're always going to need more will than you have consciousness or knowledge to complete the deal. That's how it works. Now, so let's say you, in your own personhood, have some failures. Now, the failures are usually karma. They're things that are coming to create forces against you because you were selfish at some earlier time, and now you're accelerating that by trying to overcome it in a way that is of service to others. As soon as you do that, the first doubt that may come to your mind is, I'm not worthy to get this done because I did this thing bad or that thing bad 3 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, whatever. So that comes into your mind, and that's your doubt in faith. So your own thoughts about your own failures in the past, which are coming to you because you're joining together this thing, is actually shaking your faith, and the forces that come to block you because of your prior mistakes further are evidence that you think, oh, I'm being punished because I'm really mad. It's not punishment. It's the results of your trying to overcome the elements of your own selfishness in the past and the recognition that you have to have faith, that faith has to go beyond your own accomplishments, your own failures. It has to go beyond all of that so that the faith is in God and a godly being, monad, higher self, etc., so that you're not going to rely upon just the fact that you were a perfect person before, because you weren't. If you were a perfect person, you wouldn't need the paint, but then you'd be godly yourself, and we wouldn't be talking about this. So you see, that's how it works. That's how this process comes as a test in everyone. It's not just a few people. Everyone that has high levels of faith has high levels of doubt, high levels of self-depreciation and other factors that come into play that they have to overcome to maintain their faith. That's how it works. And if you don't, you lose your faith. Your purpose then is not matched by consciousness and intelligent activity or knowledge, and the results are failure. That's the equation. Now you could say, well, how many people could do that? That's our problem. Not enough. We need more. And I'm telling you how to get over it, because the only way to get over it is to, in those situations, disregard the self-doubts. And the self-doubts are, remember, a small self, not higher self-doubts. And to say to your lower self, hey, the higher self is on board. I can connect with the monad, no problem. And you have to get over this, and the fears that you're getting are also from my personality, subconscious part of myself, who doubts everything. You know, oh, this isn't going to work. What the heck? Faith is the opposite of the self-doubt. The test is to take yourself to the higher level of faith to match the purpose that you are trying to deploy. Everybody has the same problem. It doesn't matter how big their purpose is. They have to match it within an equal amount of faith. The bigger the purpose, the higher the faith, the greater the doubts in some circumstances, the more you have to overcome them in each test to be able to achieve the results. You got it? Okay, you will be tested on that list. Okay, so you could say, well, okay, then what happens if I can't get out of it? What happens if I do have this terrible thing and I'm failing in my faith? Well, when you have that situation arise, that's why you need, if you're doing spiritual service, to other people. You see, the issue here is, and you can say, well, why is it a what? Why about I just get one? The reason you need three is because inevitably, two can be doubtful and at the same time. But again, it's this thing with God. God is in the three thing. Somehow, it inevitably seems to work out that if you get three people soul-like, the two that are in doubt, one of them will have overcome the doubt and have the faith to continue, and that's enough to keep the whole thing going. Now you can say, oh, well, that sounds too magical. All I can do is report. I don't quite understand myself. How come it's three? How come it's 30 with the lower self and all that other stuff? But all I can say is it works. God created it, and it seems to make it happen. Someday we may really understand God. But right now, good enough to know that that's what it takes. There are some books you can read about this. If you're into some of the Bailey books, Alice Bailey, in there it says pretty much what I just said to you in the numbers game. They don't explain why either, but it's okay. I guess they didn't know either. But the point is, when I say they, I'm talking about the beings who told Alice. Alice was kind of like the scribe, and she wrote everything down. But the point is that those things are still mysteries to some extent. Now, I will tell you that I and the group I'm part of, we're supposed to demystify most things. And maybe someday we'll demystify that little jewel. First, I think we've got to have enough faith to do it. it's like the whole thing. You got to have faith to do anything. And so, you say, we'll take that on someday and we'll figure the whole thing out. Probably if and when we can save the things that need to be saved around here and deal with the evil that's encroaching all around us. I mean, personally, or our people that I'm working with. So it's a kind of a strange thing that most of the time you're working kind of without full understanding. That's almost, and that's also, you know, far more than the Bailey books. If you can look at almost any spiritual book, it will say that. It'll say, leading a spiritual life is leading a life in which you pretty much do not understand a good deal what you're doing, why you're doing it. And you find out after you've done some of your accomplishments, oh, that's why. Oh, I got it now. Okay. So, and you can talk about all the things you have accomplished. And there may be great understanding that you can convey to other people and be a great teacher in that respect. But there will still be those things that are new in purpose, great in purpose, that require great faith, that understanding and knowledge is lacking. And as a matter of fact, if that weren't true, you probably wouldn't be here. You'd be some other dimension of time and space far beyond the physical. Because if you're here, for sure that's going on in your life on a pretty much regular basis. All right. So, all of this leads us to, oh, what's going to happen now with the rest of the world if we don't get enough faith going? Well, we're in a problematic period. Let me explain. The sixth ray has not been in focus since about the turn of the last century, about 1900. Bye-bye, goodbye, gone. Now, what does that mean? That means that the foundation of religion is faith, and faith has been hard for us, using our solar plexus centers in our different bodies, to be aware of and sense faith. So our ability to do this is not as natural as it was before the year 1900, for hundreds of years before that. And so, consequently, we have this difficulty because it's a growing enigma that the sixth ray is not coming back in. What's coming in right now is the fourth ray, and the third ray is going out. And so we're moving into a place where the third ray, which is highly antagonistic to the sixth, there's nothing more antagonistic from the third ray to the sixth. Those are the two rays that kind of like cats and dogs. The third ray is becoming crystallized, which means it's moving into darkness as there's a ray change. And we're going to reach the peak of this darkness starting with next year, by the fall of next year. Oh, I know, 2012. It's coming. Now, I'm not prophesizing bad natural disasters. I'm prophesizing human disasters, which are much worse for us, anyway. Not so bad, maybe, for everything else. Now, could there be natural disasters? Oh, sure, there will be some, but that's not the point. Human disasters are facing. And we're facing this issue that next year, the whole planet's faith, particularly the leading countries of the planet, will be tested. Now, I sure hope the way it's going to be tested is not by certain folks getting reelected or something, because that could be really bad. But it may be. And however it turns out next year, whatever it turns out next year, if we don't have faith, the planet could really turn very dark and evil. If we don't have spiritual faith. And then the whole planet will work or operate more under bad faith. This could be a disaster. And so, and I look at things like, you know, if you watch the news and you thought, you know, what's happening with Iran and Israel. So all that sounds like a really bad faith situation, particularly since the present administration in our country is, they speak out of two mouths, you know, and, oh, yeah, but Israel's our friend. But they're really, in terms of what their decisions are, they're pretty much giving Iran a free ride to do anything they want. And that's going to lead to some kind of disastrous problem, I believe, involving potentially nuclear weapons or whatever. And it's going to mean, if it were to come about, that we have to have a lot more faith than less. Now, the faith, again, is going to be harder to have if there's some kind of crazy nuclear exchange or just a war that starts out of this whole thing. It's going to be something really horrendous. That's one possibility. That's not even the worst thing that can happen. I'm just talking. So, probably the worst thing that could happen on the bad faith side of the situation is if the whole country becomes even further involved with class warfare and destruction of all the values that used to be American values. That could be the most dangerous thing. Well, it's something to think about. At any rate, we're going to go ahead and go to break. And when I come back, I'll tell you some of the things that we can do to make things better. Some of the things we have to look out for, which includes the last thing I just talked about. And the practical uses of some of the ideas that in this first part of the show. So we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I just moved my mic about a half inch away from where it was because I was getting a little bit maybe too much energy into that mic. We'll see how it works on the rest of the show. Maybe I'll be a bit clearer. I want to be clear. Okay, so tonight we're talking about spiritual life and faith. We're also talking about what bad faith is and how that screws up spiritual life and faith. And now I want to talk about some of the practical issues that all this leads to. On the last 5 minutes before the break, I talked about some of the crises that we're facing. We mentioned some of the political things, but there's more than just political issues that are at hand. We're going to be facing deprivations, I'm afraid. And just from the standpoint, when the third rate gets very selfish, the economy falls apart, which I guess we've already seen that. And in addition, there's other elements, militarily and other things. It all comes together to create a lot of havoc. Now, deprivation may be a form, and when deprivation of form takes place, it shakes people's faith. What do I mean by that? You may not have enough money to even buy some of the things that are almost necessities. And for some people, they may not have enough money to buy the necessities of life. Now, when that takes place, faith is based upon being able to continue your spiritual side while you're deprived material form, not having faith that you're going to get more material things to make up for the lack. If that's where you go with your thought in your life, the results are usually not too good. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't go out and work and try to earn a living or things like that, but what I'm saying is that if you give up your spiritual life because your financial issues are becoming more and more difficult, then you lose faith and you become open to the dark side. The dark side loves it when those kinds of things happen, so they try to invoke calamities of a financial nature. Now, let me give you some examples, because I know I don't want to be too just conceptual in the rest of the show. It can burn you all out and doesn't give you a balance. Think, for those of you who live in the United States, think of the state of Michigan and the city in the state of Detroit. And if you know much about what's going on there, if things go badly in the next year, especially if we elect the present president and administration, the results are going to be that most of the country, on a good day, is going to look like Michigan and Detroit, Michigan, especially if you live in the city of Detroit, Michigan. And that's going to happen within 1 or 2 years from now. It may even start happening by this time next year. So the results are going to be pretty scary, because it's going to have, and I know nothing against Michigan or Detroit, Michigan. It was a great city, still is a great city in some respects, but it has many bad things coming from the same kind of darkness in political sense, and from other avenues as well, education and other ways. And so the process could move in that direction. And what the real test is, as an example, are the people in Michigan and the people in Detroit going to lose their spiritual faith or not? If they keep their spiritual faith and cause it to grow by collectively working together. Remember, spiritual faith requires numbers. You can't do it alone. For those of you who don't understand what I'm saying, you can't do it alone. If you're talking about lower self spiritual faith, you're going to need 30 and probably hundreds of people with you to achieve much of any purpose. Now, very small purposes, you can use very small numbers, but I'm talking about fairly sizable purposes. And for the people who are trying to make a change on a more larger national, worldwide scale kind of thing, they're going to need to be connected to their soul and that consciousness, which gives them some level of monadic connection as well. And the results can be then that they will keep their faith no matter how bad things get. They'll keep their spiritual faith. And their life will become a tremendously meaningful one. Now be aware that meaning in life is directly related to spiritual faith. If you don't have spiritual faith, you have a meaningless life. The only meaning you can get is through bad faith, which is the destruction of life, which isn't really meaning. It's kind of, it's power. It's a replacement of meaning with power, but some people call that meaning life. The world is moving in that direction, too. Power will take the place of meaning if the world goes dark. It does already in a number of places, mostly outside of the U.S. But you will see this happen maybe even right in your own backyard, right here if you're in the U.S., or other countries like the United States that still have some liberty to them. And so this is the difficulty that we have to face and to prepare for. The preparation of keeping your faith under these relatively difficult times that seem to be inevitably coming is to do it while you still have some, we'll say, some good things taking place in your life. Because it becomes more and more difficult as the good things get replaced by more darkness and more destruction to life itself, and then you find yourself maybe unable to keep your faith, and that would be a disastrous outcome. So the best practice is to do it now rather than wait till next year from now, a year from now, when it will be, for a lot of people, too late. So earlier practice of developing faith comes from having greater purpose than you have consciousness and knowledge in doing good things, doing spiritual things, and pursuing those spiritual things with great sacrifice, waiting and understanding that faith will come and understanding will come as you proceed, and the knowledge necessary to create intelligent actions will also come by your creating the right purpose in having and keeping the right faith. Does it help to pray? You can pray all you want for the purpose. Do not pray for your lower self, ever. Not. If you pray for your lower self or the lower selves of others, if you're beyond that in your capabilities, the results will be disastrous. If you're not beyond that in capabilities, you'll get mixed results. So prayer has definite no-nos and has some definite yes-yeses. So be aware that there's the right way to pray and some very wrong ways to pray. Wrong ways have personal selfishness employed in them and produce some serious negative consequences. Wrong prayer brings a loss of faith for many people because rather than their prayers being answered, negative effects are manifested. Then they're shaken in their faith, and that's the worst outcome. It may not be a material outcome that is so dangerous. It's the faith and loss of spiritual faith that comes from wrong prayer that's most dangerous. All right. Now, there's some other things that we need to look at in terms of helping ourselves to prepare for maybe a time when we're going to be more challenged by bad faith. We need to be able to see the bad faith of others. Most people who employ bad faith actually do so under the guise of something spiritual or doing something good. And how do you know the difference? Well, the more good faith, the more spiritual faith you have, the more you can immediately detect the bad faith in others. The less you have, the more you'll be taken in by the lies and deceits of others' bad faith. Now, if you find that you have been taken in, be aware that it's something lacking in you that caused it, especially not enough spiritual faith. You may be very knowledgeable, may be very bright. You may have some level of consciousness, but not a high enough one to deal with the bad faith that was attracted to you for whatever aspects or test that you're going through. Any failures in not seeing bad faith have to be referred to yourself and not you just say, oh, well, the other one thought it was so good at covering this up or that, and they would have never known it. Now, it doesn't work that way. Should have seen it, would have seen it. Had you had enough faith in yourself, it would come through and you would see it. Faith is its own light. It's like a beacon. A spiritual faith gives us the ability to shine light on all bad faith. And the more we have of it, the brighter the light is, and the more the bad faith is exposed. And we help others to gain spiritual faith why the system of numbers comes into play. Because each person shines a bit of light on the bad faith of those that are dark around us. And if you can't see the darkness, it will eventually come and get you. It may not happen right away. You may be, by your standards, fortunate to avoid it for a few years or whatever. But eventually it will come. And you will need to be able to shine light on it. So you need others to be serving with you to be of help. But no matter what, we're still human. And we will fail at times. That's why it's so important to have the numbers that we talked about, to prevent the failure of the whole group of people. Now, you could say, what if I belong to a group, it's like a religious group, but there's only 10 people, or only 15, you say I need 30. What's going to happen? Groups like that in the next year may not survive. There's just not enough people thinking on a semi-selfish level. They're trying to do some things which are personally, spiritually involved, but not on a soul level. And so what happens is, when a really big bump comes, they fall apart, and they can't see the darkness, they can't see the evil, so they don't understand what's happening to themselves. And there aren't enough of them collectively to shine the light. And that's unfortunate. So, yeah, should you get more people involved? Yeah, if you can. And if you can grow your purpose, you'll get more people involved. The greater the purpose, the more people will be attracted to what you're doing, provided that your faith equals the purpose. Now, if you have a big purpose, let's say a group of 15 people, and they all say, we're going to feed all the hungry in the world, and keep them from starving. It's a pretty personal level thing, but it's a big personal level. And they only have a fraction of the faith they need to be able to do that. So they have very little understanding how to do it. They don't know when they're going to get the food from, when they're going to do this. And very little knowledge of how to bring about intelligent interactions with people to make it happen. So, guess what? Yep, they're going to fail. And you could say, well, okay, let's get 300 people. Let's get to 150 people. Let's get 150 people. Maybe we'll make it that. Maybe. The only thing is, there's two things that are wrong with this equation. The first is, there's too much personal salvation, too much personal service that is being employed in helping people with food. Instead of helping them to help others, we try to just help them on a personal level. And then, in addition to that, there's still this lack of understanding, even with 150 people, that will really get the job accomplished. And you're not paying much attention to really helping the other folks become better servants. You may be teaching them to become slaves to your whatever giving that you're doing, which is never a good thing. All right, so looking at it from that side, then, yeah, you might need hundreds, maybe hundreds. You might need the 700 or 800 people before you can really get that kind of job done. What about three spiritual, disciplined people who have significant levels of soul consciousness and have some monadic consciousness? What could they do? Well, they'll get the job done, because if there's three of them, they'll have enough faith to meet their purpose. They'll balance that out, and then they'll start gaining understanding while they're already functioning in sacrificial service, and they'll create new knowledge. In a sense, the creation of the new knowledge will come from some Buddhic plane contact, but it's truly creation of knowledge. And they'll come up with new and creative ways to do what it is, feeding all the hungry people in the world. And their method will help the hungry people that show and teach and understand how to help other hungry people to do the same. They won't just be concerned with the food. They'll be concerned about the souls of all others. Now you got a cooking system. That's a good system. Just three people could do that, although it'd be easier with maybe 6 or 12, but still, three could do it. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing stuff. Okay, so I think I'll give you a little bit of brain rest here for a couple of minutes. I want to talk about 5T Vesic tonight. Yeah, if you haven't been using it, you should try it. I use it all the time. I think it's great stuff. Terrific. It has many other uses besides just specific pain. It helps with chronic kinds of pains, chronic kinds of dysfunctions in the body, because it helps to move qi energy from places where it's stuck to places where it can move, and qi only works good when it moves. When you confine it, it develops into negative, and it's a retained kind of one of the kundalinis that retains energy in the body. That's really nasty. It creates disease rather than cures it or heals. So, 5T Vesic is a healing substance, and it does it by the movement of qi. Qi is the first of the three kinds of energies that are life-giving energies in the human body. Qi continually enters and leaves the body, and it does so from the will to live. So, as long as you're alive, you need qi, and it does it pretty good. It works with another kind of energy that comes, qi comes from the earth, but the other kind of energy comes from the sun, and that's prana. And 5T Vesic uses prana from herbs to invoke the movement of qi. Isn't that interesting? So here's a system of balance between prana and qi that allows a person to maintain themselves in a balanced health. If you haven't tried it, you should. And, you know, we have worked to try to keep it affordable, but it's still an expensive herbal product relatively. But you should try it because it's worthwhile. And compared to anything else I've used, this stuff can really make a difference. You can go to buyjesic.com, buyjesic.com, and if you prefer, you can call 602-431-5762, talk to somebody about buying some Vesic. And if you haven't also heard, Soul Balance works on the same principle, so you can look into that. That helps with certain, we'll say, diseases related to a person's immune system, not having a good enough immune system, but also it's about balancing energies. And so it works in balancing energies from certain diseases, not just pain, but diseases are present. And then we also have the group people that I work with have Ideal Self-Sorption Resveratrol. That's for adults and pets. And you should check that out, too, because I take that every day. I take the one for adults. But the one thing I can say about it is it reduces the aging process. And you're just not going to look as old as the other folks around you. Your senses will work better. And it gives you, another period of time, even with all the forces that are so difficult to live in this physical world, around us, we can gain maybe 25-30% more time in the same relative terms. So if you're going to live to be 70, you might make it to 100. If you're going to live to be 90, you might make it to 120 or 115. Those are not too bad numbers. Now, usually you have to do more than just take resveratrol, but it's a good place to start with. And it does help to change your life in general. Take antioxidants besides resveratrol. and be concerned about the lifestyle that you live. Try to balance all the energies in your body so that you're living in as close a way of health as possible. Okay, now let's go back to tonight's show and talk about the subject of spiritual life and faith. And let me tell you this. Most people have almost bouts like of faith where they say, oh, I can really feel it tonight. You know, they get together with a group of people, they're going out to sing Christmas carols this time of year, or do certain things, and the faith gets welled up in them, and they can feel it. And that, to them, is faith. Well, there is a faith that's related to the solar plexus center in the physical body that is connected to the astral body and gives us a that feeling of, we'll say, being closer to our Creator, being closer to God, and then we sense that we have more faith. But that faith is transient. It comes and goes in seconds or minutes sometimes with some people, and certainly within hours. That is not the faith that I'm referring to. As a matter of fact, that's almost the counter to it. It's not bad faith. It's just transient faith, like faith come and gone, here today, gone tomorrow kind of thing. And it comes from activities that are usually shared and with other people. Sometimes they are from activities where we watch or hear other people having faith. But regardless, it's very transient. How is that different then from spiritual life, faith, which comes from true working towards purpose, and that leads to understanding about the purpose? Well, the difference is literally going on vacation and experiencing an interesting new place for a short time and then leaving, versus creating a new place in which you are going to reside and others can come and share with you. That's a greater, more meaningful place than the place you've been all your life before that. That's the huge difference between them. And for most people, the first is their traditional mode of action, particularly this time of year. And a second may be foreign to them. They may never have attempted to do something that truly is a big purpose with faith supporting it. If you haven't done that, the thing to do is to spend some time thinking and exploring where you believe you have the most purpose in existence, in life, and what you want to do, regardless of whether you think you can do it or not, that will help the most amount of others to function as a soul. Because that's real spiritual life. And wherever that is, whatever that is, then you must pay attention to doing that. And if you do, and you say, I'm going to do this no matter what, then you have developed faith to accomplish it. And you won't understand everything about what you're doing, because by definition, if you did, you wouldn't have enough faith. You have to go way beyond what you're understanding, way beyond getting there in the immediate future by the knowledge that you presently have. You've got to create new knowledge that then will accomplish that. That leads to intelligent activities. And in order to do all that, you've got to have a big enough purpose to get you beyond your present level of faith. What a lot of people do is they get into their comfort zone. They say, oh, well, I'll just stay right where I'm at. It's very comfortable here. My present level is okay. I just won't increase my purpose, my sacrifices, my willingness to do whatever it is that is so great that I know about, but I haven't created the knowledge necessary to bring it about for others and with others. So those situations, when people have that going on, they become complacent. Then they can't see the darkness to the level they need to, and they become easily victimized by it. And they become victimized by their own lack of motive to continue to grow. They become fearful and stuck in themselves. So this is the way to approach those things, is to reflect on them, contemplate on them, and see where you need to challenge yourself more. For a lot of people, this is scary stuff, because it's so much easier, so much feel, so much more secure to stay in the personal interests that you may have, or the lower soul interests that aren't as great as the greatest you can be. Even though it seems so much easier, because you understand so much more about what you're doing here. This other stuff, you have very little understanding, very little knowledge to be able to accomplish what you want to do. And the results seem scary. Like, hey, I could really fail. If you don't think you can really fail, you probably aren't testing yourself far enough into faith. Because the test is that doubt, which is then overcome by the faith. But you're not even bothering to test it if you refuse to even have any doubt whatsoever. And you put your life in a cocoon somewhere where you don't grow. Well, I'm doing this and that for everybody else, but I'm not growing. Yeah. You can't do it that way. You're always on the decline when you do it that way. And there's no safety. There's no easy way to continue without there being considerable, we'll say, tension and problems for most people most of the time. It's not going to be easy. And you shouldn't think it's going to be. As a matter of fact, probably the hardest thing to do is to keep good faith, keep a spiritual life going, because there are so many things that are dark in this world. We came here as souls to do what I've been describing in this soul while we're in physical incarnation, which is the most difficult place to do it and the place where we're oftentimes failed. And we came here because this is the place to do it. Our souls didn't come here because it was easy. They came here because it's so hard. They came here because they want to test the faith. They came here because they want to have to work with two other or more souls, because they want to live as a soul. That's the reason we came here. And this is the most difficult place, just about any place in the universe, of any place in the universe, that we could have come to. So we are, we'll say, willing to make whatever sacrifices are necessary in such a very difficult place. When I say we, our souls were. We as people may fail to act as our souls. And that can lead to despair. It can lead to a life of narrowness. And the more you're capable of living a greater life, and the less of that life you live, the more you lose your faith, you become a victim to the bad faith of others. And you live your life like in constant fear. One fear after another. And you find your life to be virtually meaningless after a period of time of living your life that way. The change comes when we awaken to these realities, when we understand that this is going to be the way it is, and that we're not going to have the security of, well, I want to know exactly what is going to happen and where I'm going and how bad is it really going to get, and what are the parameters under which this or that can happen, and how much terribleness and this. If all those criteria are thrown onto your own back, You're not going to be claiming anything soon. You're making them for yourself when you do that. And they are really excuses for not seeing that ultimately it's just fear and cowardice and a lack of faith that is leading into those conclusions. If you haven't been leading much of a spiritual life, this becomes even more critical, because those who are not leading a spiritual life in the next year may be facing the worst dilemmas of all. They're going to face some really terrible things, in my opinion. Now, they're not going to necessarily go to hell. It really isn't a hell. But they may be facing some kinds of, we'll say, just distorted, non-meaningful existence with fears about every kind of material loss, as well as having nothing that makes much meaning in their life. They may be getting by, they may continue to get by in some material sense, but find life to be just not worth living. And that feeling is about as bad as any feeling can be. It's just emptiness in your soul, it's your emptiness of your existence. Why am I here? Why is life? So you ask yourself these questions and you don't come up with good answers, because the answers can only come by having enough faith. And you have failed in that respect. But you can make changes now. I do suggest that this is the time, because things are going to get tougher soon. And a year from now may be too late for a lot of folks. Now, you're going to say, well, okay, too late. What does that mean? Well, for most people, when it is too late, they die in a state in which they spend an inordinate amount of time in the astral and lower mental world compensating for their lack of creation while they're physically alive. They don't ever really make up for it. What they do is allow themselves to find some of the mistakes and correct them before their next incarnation, so that they've got another step up the ladder in terms of being more successful in the next life. It doesn't make this life more palatable. It doesn't make it easier. And meaning in this life is just as much lacking most of the time. That's the problem. And so if we want to really get practical about the situation, you got to start right now, because if we don't start right now, we'll probably never catch up, because I think things are going to swing way out of hand. Now, what about like 5 years from now? 5 years from now, one way or another, things are going to start getting better. They will have either started getting better in the next year, or they will start getting better in that fifth year. Not because anything good has happened, but because they can't get any worse. Because things have gotten so much worse that people will give up almost anything to have a spiritual life of faith and to have a meaningful life again. And they won't care about the material outcomes anymore. So that's one possibility. It still may take a century or two to climb out of the destructive hole, because so much of life will have been destroyed. And so much of our society and civilization will have gone down the tubes. Because darkness for 5 years will have taken root. It's a very bad thing. I hope it doesn't work. I hope it doesn't happen. I hope more of us will create a spiritual life so we can shine with our faith, the light, onto the dark ones, onto the bad faith people, and eliminate them soon, rather than wait so long, where they bring so much destruction and so much terrible, painful lives to so many people, meaningless lives. Now, some of you might say, well, why not go with the flow? I'll just become one of the bad folks. Aren't they going to get all the power and control, have all the material things they want, etc.? Well, you would think so. For a while, they live on the power, but they still live with the fear that they eventually will lose the power, because they will. And they still lead with the lack of meaning in their lives, but they try not to stay conscious of it. But eventually that will come crashing through as well. That could take a long time, thousands of years, tens of thousands, who knows? But the point is, when it does, it's a terrible thing. Terrible. They literally give up their humanity, and they have to live their life through the lives of much lower forms of life. Not much. All right, so 5 years from now, we could be facing these dilemmas. I'm going for and hoping that more spiritual groups will work together and will find a way of overcoming some of these, lack of faith. And they'll do it by having their members reach a point where they become enlightened enough that together they start creating great bodies of light, points of light, for all others to see and respect and to emulate in terms of their behaviors and their hearts and their purposes. Won't copy, emulate. That's the key. Being creative in the process is so important. You don't want to copy, per se. You want to emulate. All right. In terms of our more spiritual listeners, if you are a member of a spiritual group or considering of doing so, then recognize that just being a member of a spiritual group may not be enough, particularly in the coming year. You need to be one of those members, hopefully everyone in your group would be, that is able to shine the light on the bad faith by exercising such good faith, such godly faith, that it supplies enough impetus to make the greatest changes that they can conceive of and that they are willing to sacrifice for. These will be huge changes to themselves. And so hopefully you will find yourself among those that do that by being creative now and by trying some of the things that I'm suggesting in tonight's show. Does it help to read life's hidden meaning? Yeah. If you haven't got a copy of it, get it and read it. What the heck? Is it a hard book? Probably the hardest you've ever read. But what if you do 10% of what's in the book? Change your life tremendously. Will you find hidden meaning? Absolutely. Will your life become much more faithful? Yes. Good faith will be in abundance. It will encourage you. Should you only read life's hidden meaning? No. You should read anything and everything you think has spiritual context to you and meaningful. Certainly. Read it all. And listen to more of these shows. You can go on to the website that they're on or to the station and listen to shows going back long ago in time. Some before I was on this station, some while I was on other stations, at least as far as our website is concerned. And you can hear all this. And there's a lot of areas of truth, a lot of help that can come in terms of helping to raise consciousness. And give clues to how to create new knowledge for the circumstances that you're facing, that where there is darkness and there needs to be more light. I don't care what element or what kind of thing you're doing in society. If you're willing to put your life on the line to do it, that's a wonderful thing. That's a big thing. If you're not willing to virtually put anything on the line, you'll accomplish almost nothing. I even get sometimes a little ticked off sometimes at people telling me how they lead such a spiritual life and they don't do anything. And when I ask them about that, They say, well, I'm going to get it done someday. I know that. It's just I work so much. You know, it's a lot of money and time, and I got all these other problems, and on and on and on. And you just want to reach out and grab them and say, what's the matter with you? You have no faith. Yeah, we have no faith. All right, let's talk about the great Glenn Beck. One of the three things he believes are the most important issues in the founding of the United States and in creating a great life of spiritual service and faith. Now, did he come to that by all the stuff I taught tonight? I don't think so. I don't think you have to reach this understanding of faith by having all of these concepts and examples in your head. I think he came to it through his own living and watching others. But he's right on target, right? Yes, one of the three great things. And one of the areas that he tries to address is that if you have faith, you're willing to give anything to anyone to help them to get faith, which is another word for that is charity. And so we should also look at the process of our existence to be giving to others on as high a level as possible. Now, I'm not talking about giving people money or things. I'm talking about giving people faith, or helping them to find their faith, and giving people the ability to serve, the ability to serve others. This is the biggest part of charity. And unfortunately, it's missing in almost every contextual sense, outside of the few people that I've heard say something different about, including Ben. And so it is with great emphasis that I say this, that you need to be charitable, but in a new and different way than maybe you could have before. In the new and different way, you've got to be charitable to the point of realizing that charity involves great wisdom. So giving without wisdom is anti-charity. It leads to dependence, shallowness, reduction in meaning for the lives of others that you're giving to, and for yourself eventually as well. This is one of the problems that people have, is they don't get that part. Why is it so difficult to give in those particular ways? Because it means that the sacrifices have to be much greater if you're going to give in charity in ways that truly develops wisdom in yourself and others. For a lot of people, they don't want to make that kind of sacrifice, you see. So they want to look like they're being charitable to others, but they don't want to do the great sacrifices necessary in order to accomplish this. And that's why it doesn't happen so much. Another area that Glenn likes to talk about is hope. What is hope? Hope is the other side of faith. When somebody has a great deal of hope, it's because they recognize that there's something greater out there that eventually will lead to their own contributions and those of the others that they are co-serving with, so that they will achieve the purpose at hand. So you see, there really is just like the other side of the coin to faith. Those who have no faith have little hope. And if you don't have hope, it's very difficult to motivate yourself to have purpose. And you see how the whole thing becomes self-defeating, self-destructive. The dark side, the bad faith side, that tries to destroy charity, hope, and faith all at the same time, because they are so in- interconnected, that this is the best plan they could come up with. When you become hopeless in your life, you have lost God as well, and you're faithless. And evil can easily overcome you and convince you to become destructive to life, to be corrupted, selfish, greedy. All those things become easily a part of victimization, and a person to themselves, actually. It may be instigated and encouraged by others of bad faith. Really. Okay, how do we ultimately destroy those others of bad faith? Well, first of all, they will destroy themselves, but they are can be encouraged along the way, so to speak, by shining light on them. And the greatest light is of each of us leading a life of spiritual purpose that equals our responsibilities and abilities and exceeds our consciousness and our present level of knowledge. Once you establish that that's the way you're going to live, you will start destroying evil. And if three people do it on a soul level together, they'll destroy prodigious amounts. Prodigious. If 30 people do it on a very minimal level, they'll destroy a little bit of evil. Bad faith. And if thousands do it, then I can substantially get rid of evil as well. Although the ones with the soul consciousness will do it even faster and more effectively, even than the 1,000 people might. The reason they do is because 1,000 people have to average out all of their selfish ideas and motives before they can take action. Whereas the consciousness of the 3, 6, 9, 12 people in a spiritual group can use their faith to almost immediately take action because they use spiritual hierarchical thought. They almost instantly know what the truth is about each thinking person's thinking and contribution, and very little time is wasted on averaging out all the negative, bad, wrongful thinkings that won't really work. They're more efficient. Much more efficient. And they can get a lot more done. That's also part of the secret and why so few can do so much with almost nothing. And so many can do so little with so great an amount that they could give and that they failed. It's a mystery, but maybe it's not so much a mystery after tonight's show. You see how it works. Pretty fascinating stuff. What else can we do to help get rid of the evil exercising bad faith? Well, one of the elements that is of positive effect, besides us being active and creative of truth, is to also be teachers of truth. Now, you can teach truth in a number of ways. I'm involved in some ways right now that are kind of odd to me. It involves the law and stuff. You can teach the truth through law, but you've got to be masterful at writing and using the tenets of law, the rules of law, and the rules of the way judges and lawyers and courts and statutes and cases are thought of to bring about this change. The same is true in areas of other professions like medicine, sciences, and or in some cases, religion, or we'll call it spirituality. All the, you know, every one of these possible areas, and far more, you can create new truth. New truth always exposes bad faith in others. New truth leads to the ones who are using bad faith to be tripped up and unable to fool others any longer. The truth reveals their falsities, their deliberate propaganda methods of destruction, their out-and-out lies. And the exposure of truth is really important because we as a race of humans at the present time are trying to develop this virtue. It is the thing we're here for. So it's no small thing. Now, it's great for us to talk about spiritually developed people working on creating beauty, etc. But that's way ahead of the rest of the humanity at the present time on Earth. They're trying to figure out truth. And they're failing miserably. So the more we can expose truth and help others to see it, the more bad faith is driven out of life. And the more spiritual faith, good faith, is produced, godly faith. And that's a really good thing. In every area of life, there is truth that is lacking. In most areas, there's a phenomenal amount of truth lacking. Because although our race has been around for hundreds of years, this is a small amount of time, and it may take another 1,000 years before the race is able to create enough truth so that the world is more truthful than not, and then we can move ahead. It's kind of scary. It would have to take that much time. But unfortunately, if you look around us, look at how much propaganda and non-truth that exists. And how often do you experience the truth? Pretty terrible, isn't it? So this is the reason that bad faith and the bad side, the evil ones, they manage to stay where they have been. Because they don't have to worry so much about the truth coming and getting and exposing them. They don't have to worry much about people living purposeful lives that they have enough faith to make sacrifices in to complete. But it just doesn't happen very often. But we can make a difference, all of us. All of you right now, listening to my voice, can make a difference. You can support in whatever ways you can and choose to. Purpose. If you don't find enough purpose in your life, just contact us. We got a lot of stuff going on. I keep saying that. Somehow, when people find out what it's all about, they're scared as all can be. They say, well, you know what? I come to think about it. I'll do something else. But nice to meet you. Know about all the stuff you're involved in, but it's scary. It's scary. Because you got all these bad faith people. You got all these evil people. They're really doing some terrible things. And I don't know if that's really what I had as my agenda. I wanted to kind of just bathe in the sunlight, you know, and kind of smell the flowers, maybe pick a few, once in a while, contribute. Well, yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem. And most people have their faith to a level which is comfortable, not which is challenging. And they give in charity to a very minimal level. And they have rather hopeless lives. Scary stuff. All right. So, I hope this has given you some framework for how you can make some changes in your future. Now, let's talk about the distant future, going past 5 years, maybe 50, 100, 150, 200 years. Where is this planet headed? Well, we're in a contest. We have the evil dark ones trying to create bad faith, constantly lying and
producing falsities and untruthfulness. We have a lot of other people afraid to face them, afraid to make the sacrifices necessary to develop true good levels of faith that puts them close to their Creator and allows them to have extraordinarily meaningful lives. So what is the bottom line about all that? Well, the bottom line is the planet could go dark, meaning that a significant portion of people become evil. And then there really is no chance that the planet will get out of it. And what's the chances of that happening right now? Guy, you know, it's pretty close to 50-50. It's one of those things where nobody really knows the answer because it's so close. And if this world fails, it's because it was designed in such a difficult way to be alive in and to try to have spiritual life. It isn't because it's on an average thing that generally tends to happen. Most worlds do not fail. Earth is a great challenge, tremendous challenge. And if we do fail here, collectively assault 500,000 of you, the planet may shut down. We may not go on to what is called the next round of life. Now, why would God choose that? It isn't exactly God, but it's higher beings who don't think that there is a fruitful outcome under any circumstance for life to continue to prosper. And then they just have some big rock come from outer space and runs into the planet, and we're very fragile, actually. And everything is dead in 24 hours. It actually could happen. You know, knocks us off our axis, causes great crust to slip around, fall off. And who knows? Maybe it cracks the planet wide open and everything becomes super heated and crazy. But as long as you're living on it, you're not going to survive. And then what happens is you go to the astral world and eventually the mental, and you leave this world. You don't become, even the astral monastic worlds don't stay very intact as the planet is destroyed. And so there won't be any physical earth left. It's going to be off to some other place. Souls will usually leave in mass, but could leave individually, but usually leave in mass. And all life will be gone, most likely. Unless it's chosen that humans are allowed to destroy themselves, but that may not destroy all the rest of life on Earth. And the good news about that is Earth could continue, at least as having some life on it, except it won't be human. And that's not usually destined for a great outcome. Now, again, it isn't that God wants us, but this is the most challenging place because the sorts of people we're dealing with here are very mentally focused these days. They have a tendency to be great challenges for all life. And they have, it's like the collection of some of the worst of darkness in our galaxy, right here on Earth. It was allowed to take place because this was going to be a grand experiment on the dark side, trying to fight and see what ways that evil could be overcome and what ways it might overcome good. So it's a laboratory. A laboratory with unfortunate consequences for all the life on the planet. And we don't know where it's going to end up, but that's one of the possibilities. What's the other side of the fence then? Can we expect maybe in 500,000 years things will really get a lot better? Yes, it's possible. Let me get into this part of it. The first thing that's going to need to happen is that we've got to have a few more of the spiritual people live more spiritual lives. And to develop a level of faith a few rungs on the ladder higher than where they're willing to go right now. Then we'll be able to see those folks to start making the big inroads, and others will take notice and say, well, what is it they're doing over there? And they'll get interested in it because they see some of our success and the exposure of the bad side, the exposure of bad faith. And so that'll give those people a level way of achieving some kind of change in this world. We're going to need to have at least, we'll say dozens of spiritual groups, some who function along the second way, at least one or two, who are going to be able to make the leap to function in such hostile circumstances with so much against them, and that lead a very spiritual life and have faith that no matter what happens, they're going to contribute to their purpose and develop the consciousness and eventually the knowledge to make the changes in the world that it needs. They don't expect to get it from outside sources. They have to do it for themselves. Now, 500 years is a long time, and the possibility that we could make it within that time. But we could have a couple hundred years of darkness, starting really right now. Now, some of us won't come back to this world during those couple hundred years. That's another option. And some of us will come back for a couple lifetimes. But it depends on the nature of what we believe our best use is for us as a soul, not as a person. And so when we get back to our souls, most of us will be back down within the next, 50 years? Depends how old you are when you're listening. So. But we'll be back there. When we get back, we'll be looking at and attempting to make some relevant, important contributions. Now, in the interim, we can spend 30 years in the astral world, 30 years in physical life. Another 10 to 20 or 30 years of physical life in the mental world or longer. And the people who are most spiritual might do that. And other people who are a little less spiritual, you can multiply that by 3 or 4 times. So it gets into an issue that you might go through several incarnations before this system resolves itself one way or another. I personally believe that in the next 100 years, we're either going to succeed or the planet may not exist anymore. We might kill everything, not just ourselves. So because there's so many terrible things that we've created and we're creating more of them, it's possible these things will eventually come to us, be it some kind of global virus that kills everyone. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities of things that are waiting in big terms to try to grow. Ultimately, there's still the rock in space coming, but I don't know that that's going to really be the destiny of Earth. Now, if you were to accumulate and add together all the bad faith in the world today, it amounts to less than 5% of the faith. That's not very much. 5%. However, it's concentrated in various locales, maybe in certain cities, certain states, certain countries. And that's the problem we have, because it's so densely populated in certain places. It uses this to its great advantage. Most of the world is not here, not in population. And if we're talking about these relatively low percentages of 7 billion people, that's a very small number, actually, in relative terms. Nonetheless, if you don't get rid of the bad faith, because it's almost invisible to all the other folks, except for the few who are really doing the job, they can do enormous amounts of damage. Their ability to damage is based upon their ability to hide, to keep themselves from all else. So So within 500 years, they could do a tremendous amount of damage, although most of it, I think, will be in the first 1 to 200 years. And that's where we've got to be most concerned about. I think that one of the things that's going to be required is that people actually start being taught some of the stuff that I'm teaching, which is demystification of ageless wisdom. Because if we don't start earlier trying to learn and understand this stuff, I don't think people, by the time that they normally would, turn to become of good faith, will have enough practice in being sacrificial and in trying to take on greater purposes to lead their life in the most meaningful directions. We have a schism. The schism is mostly in the education of people. Some of it is in the failure of families to do so. Some of it is in the failure of all other types of education to do so. Both of these have some really dire consequences. But I would certainly want to start, in part, if I was doing the big picture, with trying to change a lot of the educational system today, right now. Because there's just no way, if you don't do that, I don't see that people are getting, we're going to have this kind of circle, this cyclic issue of people going back to being lost. And that would be just horrible. Each generation is back getting lost again. I'm seeing this happen in my own life after the times I've lived. And there's this cycle, you know. Like right now, there's so many young people who believe in socialism and communism and Marxism and the form of communism and are into the incredibly darkest side of government and economy that you can be into. And mistakenly doing so. When 30 years ago, those numbers were very low, they're very high now. And these dark ideas come from those that are smart enough in the dark world, the dark side, to be able to snare up the people who are usually younger and less wise. And it's just the way that works. The way of the world is you go after the weakest. And many times the younger folks are the weakest in terms of this kind of thinking. So I do believe that we need some education that is enlightened education and about this specific subject, which is, of course, not taught virtually anywhere. So that's going to be a big change if we can do it. You know, another thing might be to start schools that do it. I mean, sure, there's a few of them around today. I mean, a couple. But most of them are stuck on the past. They teach mystified or semi-mystified teachings that a lot of people today can't even figure out what they're talking about. So they're in there learning sayings and phrases, and they don't make any sense to them. They don't know what's that meaning. Or maybe they know what they did mean, but they don't know what they could mean today. It's a real problem. But I think that's one area which has got to change and got to improve upon. We're doing what we can, but the fact of the matter is this is so big that although it is a purpose of a group like this to be able to take it on, we need still greater amounts of help from all of you out there if we're going to get anywhere. And yes, if we were just perfect in our spiritual life, we probably could do almost anything. But we haven't been, and we're presently not, so we can't do almost anything the way perfection would be. It's unfortunate, but it's true. There's other groups who are in the same position. Maybe you don't even know who they are. That's okay. It doesn't matter. All right, and then let's talk. We got no more time here, but let's talk about the last part of this piece of the puzzle, which is, besides having the educational side, people have to actually want to create a new world by physically and astrally or mentally creating it in the world that they live, while they live there. And that takes a lot of effort, particularly in the physical world, much less in the astral, or even less than that in the mental. So you've got to be willing to actually create. You've got to be willing to not only say, gee, I understand it all, but now you've got to go out and sweat and heart and push and create things that exemplify these great understandings and the great purpose that you have. And then the faith becomes realized in what you produce. It is the production, that is the end product, that proves the person had the faith to begin with. Well, yeah, it is that time again. Looking at the clock. Oh, my God. All right. So we're out of time for right now. Hopefully you understand what spiritual life and faith is about, all the different sides of it, including out 500, even 1,000 years from now. And hopefully we'll all be part of having to be able to look back at souls and say, we did it then.